And good morning, everyone, and thank you for joining the Electronic Prior Authorization RFI Task Force. I'm Mike Berry. I'm with ONC, and we're always happy that you could be with us. And I just want to remind everybody, your feedback is always welcome, which can be typed in the chat feature to everyone throughout the meeting, or can be made verbally during the public comment period that is scheduled at about 11:20 Eastern Time this morning. So let's begin roll call of our task force members. So when I call your name, please indicate that you are present. Let's start with our co-chairs. Cheryl Turney.
Good morning.
Tammy Banks.
Present.
Hans Bootendijk.
Good morning.
Raj Godabarty.
Good morning.
Jim Turgis.
Present.
Rich Lambden.
Good morning.
Heather McComas.
Good morning.
Aaron Meary. Patrick Murdoch.
Good morning.
Elio Oliveira. Michelle Schreiber. And Deborah Strickland. All right, thank you, everyone. And now please join me in welcoming Cheryl and Tammy for their opening remarks.
Thank you so much. I wanted to first welcome Patrick. He's joined our task force since we last met. So very happy to have you on board. And we also lost a member, Alexis Snyder, who was unable to work with us. So I do want to make note of that. I also want to thank everyone for going out and doing their homework. We got a lot of comments in our Google Docs. So thank you very much for that. We're going to have a robust discussion today. And I think that we're going to have a lot of information that we're going to be able to discuss and share. We are going to talk a little bit today related to how we want to move forward and where we are in our timeline. So I'm looking forward to that. Also wanted to say that we had discussed last meeting having a speaker come in from HL7 to provide a quick overview of the three DaVinci implementation guides that are mentioned in the rule. And we do have someone coming in. He was not able to come today, but he will be coming to our next meeting next Thursday. So please look forward to that. Viet Nguyen, who is very active in DaVinci and will make that presentation. RFI mentions the CCDA. Some of us, including myself, are not deep experts in the CCDA. So if that is something that you're intimately familiar with as we get to the RFI and those discussions, we really would be happy to have people step up and provide additional technical background and or overview of the CCDA as we are discussing those questions that come up in the RFI. And I'm looking forward to the discussion today, and I'll turn it over to Tammy.
All right, are we ready to get into the discussion? I didn't see the slides go, so I wasn't sure where we're at.
Oh, this is the agenda. I'll be happy to go over it, Tammy, and then
I'm happy to, either way, whatever you want.
Go ahead, and then Tammy's going to lead the discussion today from the document. Go ahead.
We're just excited to get into the meat, right, Cheryl?
Absolutely.
Okay, so we're going to review the comments from the working document, and then we're going to move on into section one and look at the three different questions in that area. We'll have public comment and then get to the homework and next steps. I will, if you don't mind, Cheryl, take some of the homework in the RFI discussion as well. And we hope to jam pack again a lot in this hour and a half because we do have a shortened time frame. So we can move on to the next slide. So today, again, we're going to basically get into the major first discussion and get into the first few questions and discuss the report structure. Want to go on? All right, so if I can switch over to my screen here.
While you're doing that, Tammy, there was a note in the chat, which I do think merits a conversation. So as we're talking about attachments as well, if any of the panelists are knowledgeable in the attachment standards, I know that CAQH Core had developed attachment standards that never got implemented as a final rule. That's would probably merit some conversation as well. So go ahead.
Perfect. So the goals of our discussion today is we're going to review the additions to the functional capabilities during the last meeting and through the homework. I did not go through the transcripts. I did go through the comments. So please, if I missed anything, let's get them captured. Make sure we have consensus on those. Then we're going to continue through the other two questions in topic one, focused on certified health IT functionality. We're going to assign RFI question areas, just so we make sure that we have strong focus on each of these questions based on the strength of our work group members. And then, as Cheryl mentioned, identify or agree on subject matter experts and what information we're going to need to fill in the gaps through the rest of the questions as we go through this material. So the first question, what we were focusing on was the functional capabilities for the certified health IT modules. And capturing your information, these are the caveats or things that we really need to think about or include comments, recommended that these be included in the report. So I'm gonna go through them. And if anybody has any disagreement with any of these or wish to embellish on them, again, we don't have to wordsmith, this is just the content at this point. Then we at least, you know, can get consensus on what the points were in comments at the last meeting. So all PA requests should be triggered at the physician or designated healthcare provider discretion. Provider authorization responses must be for a patient-specific coverage benefit based on their plan coverage. Payers are encouraged to routinely evaluate prior authorization submissions and or rules that are typically approved and considered implementing a trust and verify framework. And there was a comment which elaborated on this a little bit more, which would be an example of gold carding. And Texas State has a requirement to offer gold carding programs. PA functional capabilities may occur in different systems, EMR, PMS or the revenue cycle management system, smart app, and prior auth is not always an interaction between payer and provider. The care provider setting has option to choose preferred systems, internal, external app, et cetera, based on preferred workflow. Remain cognizant of the impact on the workflow and if removing or adding burden to the process. I think care provider and payer settings will be able to routinely and compliantly request and respond to PA requests timely if there is accurate, actionable information within their workflows to drive the use. Privacy and security of the data should be considered in EHR development along with the functional capabilities. Need to think through the patient involvement in all these data flows, how to keep the patient informed if he, she requests, while not overwhelming with detail, and how to represent messaging to patients in plain language, not EDI code, and need to build into the provider workflow, which sometimes may be real time in the patient and sometimes back of the office staff work. Now, is there anything that I missed from the conversation last week or anything that someone does not necessarily agree with these caveats to the functional capabilities of the PA workflow? Rich?
Ian, comment is reacting to these. I don't have any comments about missing anything, but two questions. One is, we allude to, but do not specifically mention non-providers initiating electronic prior authorization. I think we had an example last call of DME. Do we need to be a little bit more specific about other than providers initiating the EPA and how that would fit into the process? And then the second concern is really a question. We talk about physician or designated healthcare provider. Would there be any circumstances, any situations in which the patient himself or herself would initiate a prior auth request? I'm not familiar any, but I it's a big wide world out there. So if anybody knows the answer to that.
I think it depends on what you mean. I mean, I think it's Jim Jurgis is still pined here. Medical services that have to be ordered by a credentialed appropriate provider is what we're talking about here, right? So the two circumstances that you're talking about are by provider, we may mean their designated staff. And I think that's what you're trying to say by designated healthcare professional, right?
Is that better, changing provider to professional? Would that be?
Yeah.
The terminology?
The only thing is, it's technically correct, but professional, you're trying to talk staff? About, yeah, I would say staff. I'd be more explicit because that's the burden.
Yeah, as I think about that, I'm sorry, Jim, I just tend to think of that terminology as vendor.
Staff discretion you view as vendor?
No, DME would be vendor rather than staff.
True, but DME is not ordered by DME suppliers, right? They're ordered by healthcare professionals who are licensed to do so. And it's adjudicated by their staff that may act as an extension of them. Is that right? That's how I think of it.
Okay, that's helpful, but I agree it must be ordered by healthcare professional, but the actual prior auth request, isn't that initiated by the DMA vendor pursuant to the professional's order? So I guess I'm getting more into workflow there.
Yeah, and I think the use case in one of the implementation guides is actually a DME vendor, Rich, so it's good to call out. I think that one was for oxygen, but the same scenario could be said for a wheelchair. It's going to be the wheelchair vendor that basically submits the prior auth requests based on the a doctor's order that the wheelchair is needed, and then whatever special requirements, because that's the one we used in our intersection of clinical administrative data, when you need special either attachments or capabilities on the wheelchair, those are the things also that would have to be substantiated.
I think that just to put the genesis of this statement, I think the context when it was said was that the vendor cannot automatically submit PA request just because a CPT code was entered, that the physician or a designated healthcare staff has to see it and has to actually submit it. So I think that was the context, but so we're going to have to add the other use cases to it to make it a more robust response. Is that kind of where we're going, Jim?
Yeah, I completely agree. And to me, let's think of future use cases, right? So there's two situations here. There's the initial prior auth for DME, right? And that in the future may come, obviously will come from the doctor-patient encounter, et cetera. But in the future, when it comes time to renew it, then I could see services like apps that are developed as intermediaries, that part of the value they provide is anticipating when authorizations are going to expire and new ones are needed. So the re-upping of an authorization may be initiated by third-party intermediaries and then responded to and concur. And obviously, you need the provider's order in the end to renew it. But the triggered piece was the word I had. It's a little, it may not be triggered by the provider. It may be triggered by a new set of apps out there that are keeping track of making sure things don't lapse and maybe communicating to patients, right? Or to providers that, hey, in 4 weeks, it's going to expire. That wouldn't be triggered. That renewal may be triggered by someone different than the initials.
Would that be that it's triggered by either an individual like a physician, clinician, authorized individual to do that, but it could also be triggered as we progress in the level of automation and learning, that policies are agreed to and established, therefore effectively representing the clinician's best practices and otherwise, that can be the trigger too.
I agree. And somebody asked the question about patients. This is a great example. It's in the DME space where we heard testimony after testimony in the ICAD task force of frustrated parents and patients whose child had specific DME needs, and the amount of time it took, if it lapsed, then they were in a pickle. And so patient access and empowering the patient to maybe even initiate a renewal, or, you know, well, I think those are the examples of where the patient would be involved. I think we all think of prior offer of medical services as, you know, hey, you need the colonoscopy. That's really between the provider and the payer. But when it comes to DME and quality of life, the patient being able to initiate, communicate.
Right. And a prescription would be similar to that too, Jim, where they need the renewal and another prior auth has to happen the following year. So the patient in that case could easily initiate the request that would then go to the doctor for the substantiation. Yeah. So I think those are two scenarios, and the DME is more complex because it might require multiple inputs from multiple healthcare professionals. But yeah, there definitely would be a need. And we do need to reimagine the future. Today it's limited because there are no apps that would allow for that communication to go across. But in the future, that won't be the case. I do see a hand up too. Heather, do you want to?
Yeah, sure. And actually, Cheryl, just picking up your thread, you mentioned prescription drugs. And I was wondering if the task force members thought it was important for us to recognize the situation with prescription drugs. The RFI actually mentions the beginning that there is a optional capability right now to support the NCPTB script EPA transactions, but it's an optional functionality. It's not required. And so we're not really doing anything about certification for prescription drug electronic prior authorization kind of in this conversation. So I wondered if we felt like we should comment on that, if, you know, that should say something about the prescription drug EPA being a required part of certification. I welcome others' thoughts on that.
I think
so,
that's
Heather, good. Where would you put that in the statement?
It would be part of the capabilities. We would have to include that as
we'll get there. Okay.
Functions and capabilities that we wanted to cover prescription drugs. And we mentioned that in ICAD as well, especially when it relates to prior authorizations that would go from one payer to another. So you go in November, you get your prior auth for your drug, and then you move to another payer in January, and that prior auth should go with you. So you don't have to go through all that again. I do see some additional hands up. The next one that I saw was Patrick Murda.
Yeah, Cheryl, thank you. And this, I'm not sure this applies directly here, but going in to say all medical prescription payer requests should be triggered, totally agree with that. But there is a step before that in determining if PA is even required. So going directly to PA is quite an expensive transaction. I don't mean in dollars, but it's fairly heavy as it relates to 270 or other transaction. So a lot of work that we're doing from an industry perspective is determining with a lighter weight transaction, is there even PA requirements for this particular medical procedure? So calling out the fact that a lighter weight transaction will eliminate a large percentage of expensive true PA interactions.
A quick comment on that.
Can we hold on 1 second? Okay. Because we're going to get to the functional capabilities. Is all the content, this needs to be reworded, is all the content in this bullet that should be there? And then we'll bring it back and wordsmith it at a later date, but I think is the intent there. Go ahead.
Okay. And we do have two more hands up. So
if it's on this topic, so we can move on and actually get to the functional capabilities. Jim?
Am I next on the hand? Can't see who else's hands up.
Hey, Hans.
I thought it was Jim in front of me because I trying to find my hand.
Yeah, Jim, you're first because it goes in order on my screen. So sorry. Oh, okay.
Yeah, hey, one I might consider if I understand this list is, you know, our goal, the goal in automating is to reduce the human effort, improve timeliness, et cetera, and improve transparency, right? But I wonder if there are caveats in there about, you know, one of our goals is to minimize the number of, there's some performance in there. You know, our goal is to minimize the number of inappropriate PAs. Like, for example, the payer's job is to make sure healthcare costs don't get out of control. The provider and patients to make sure they deliver, get the care they need. So a prior auth process ought to include a balancing of reducing MUDA, A, unnecessary applications for PA when they aren't needed. You know, the length of time to getting approval so it doesn't interfere with patient care. And some metric around performance. What are our goals in this? It's not just to automate, but it's to optimize and minimize the unnecessary effort and optimize the rapidity of approvals. And I just wonder if we ought to recommend that design be oriented around those goals.
Jim, you are so good, and I'll go through the transcript, but is there anything that you would add in this addition?
Prior auth process eliminates burden meets performance goals. Eliminates burden, meets performance goals to optimize redundancies and unnecessary effort. And I leave it broad because that might be, hey, I did a big process only to find out it wasn't needed. So I think you captured it there.
Jim, that's what I was trying to get to as well. Don't do it if you don't have to.
Yeah. And if you do it, let's not have 4 weeks that it takes. Hey, the other thing I was going to add is, do we need anything? We're focusing as if, maybe one thing we need to be careful of, we're focusing as if all of these are brand new prior auths, right? And so I wonder if we need to be more deliberate about the renewal, like we mentioned, but also the appeal process, right? So, you know, in the event that all this works and there's a denial and there's an attempt to appeal, that appeal process is fairly opaque now, laborious, manual, non-automated. So my recommendation to the group is that we're clear as we go forward in the next few weeks around making sure we're thinking of the initial prior auth, the renewal, and how we deal with appeals. Because that's where all of the effort and cost, each of those are buckets that are pretty big and may have different and subtle requirements.
Okay, Hans?
Yes, question that I had that was triggered by a comment by Heather and inclusion of prescriptions. Completely agree that prior auth applies to prescriptions as well, but is that in scope of the RFI? Because there's the main conversations around are the Da Vinci, the X12, but there is already a flow for prescriptions with NCPDP out there. Just want to make sure, is it in scope for this RFI or is it out of scope that this only looks at everything but prescriptions given the current state of capabilities? I'm okay either way. I just want that it will influence how comments are going to be made.
Hey Hans, it's Heather. I'll jump in and I agree with you. The bulk of the questions on the RFI are obviously about medical services, and I wouldn't expect that we would spend a lot of time on it, but given the fact that the script EPA transactions are optional right now, it seems to me that for certification purposes, it seems to me that it might make sense to comment on that. If we're talking about requiring these other standards for medical services as part of certification, it seems like we want to comment on the fact that the prescription drug transactions are optional right now. That's my thought.
Go ahead.
That probably makes a lot of sense to acknowledge that, indicate that, hey, there might be value there as well. We probably then want to have a couple of other comments or statements made to recognize there's already standards out there or whatever it might be, and that we're not trying to further comment on that, that we're really focusing on this particular area where there are less standards or different issues that we're trying to resolve. Thank you.
Could we, on that comment, could we focus on the medical services for today and put that on the additional consideration list, which we, after we go through these functional capabilities, we will go back and have the conversation on two other points that were brought up yesterday and the pharmacy question today, the single versus bulk, the concurrent care authorizations, and the pharmacy services. Would that be acceptable to everybody just so we can move forward, recognize that we're going to come back and then adjust based on those other focuses?
Great.
Okay. Anybody have anything else that I either missed or you think, and again, we can add, I just want to get agreement that we're in agreement with those so that we don't have to keep coming back to these comments because they're very important. Jim.
Yeah, one thing to consider too while we're focused on this is one of the use cases in our environment that during ICAD assembled all of our people who do this and got feedback about where the pain points were. One of them, and let me explain it real quick and you guys can decide if there's a bullet in there. It's about the coordination of multiple different business entity providers. Like for example, around a surgery, right? Often there's a time period that and a scheduled appointment, but there may be anesthesia, there may be two different surgeons, there's a variety of different orchestrated approval that occur as part of a package. And one thing I might say is the design should help improve transparency and performance. What we heard is 80% of the prior auth would be done in the time frame, but one wasn't. And then they had to start the whole process over because the one piece wasn't done and the timeline expired, right, for the prior auth. So I think a bullet about making sure coordinating for complex medical services and devices that where multiple prior auths are required for that service, that this system needs to provide transparency and efficiency and minimize the unfortunate effects of the complexities of multiple prior auths for a single procedure. But you can make that more succinct, I'm sure.
Can you help me just a little bit?
What do we think about the word bundle, like bundling for an episode of care, prior authorizations for surgery and all the related services?
Cornish of care for episode, right? Well, it's not even an episode. It could be bigger than that. Episode of care.
Or medical service. I think the surgery with multiple different surgeons and anesthesiologists, et cetera, is a great example because I love the idea of bundle, but let's add to the bundle. We're not just talking about a surgeon has a bundle of CPT codes that make up a procedure and that bundle needs prior auth. We're also talking about the anesthesiologist and others that need prior auth. And bundle I just want to make sure bundle doesn't imply that it's just one provider who has a bundle of services, because it may be multiple provider entities for a single service. And the insurance companies don't view it as a single service. They view it as a set of, they're looking at the atoms and it's a molecule, right?
And it's actually authorization for an entire protocol, an agreed upon protocol.
Yeah, there you go. Are there protocols for each of these? Or is it just that the anesthesiologist needs to have prior auth? And so,
some of these do. If there is a protocol for a certain condition where you've got, a surgeon and whatever, then you can approve the entire protocol.
Well, I agree. I think we should plan for a protocol, but also there may be complexities I just described that don't have a protocol. And I wouldn't want
to
anchor that. I think you nailed it. You're exactly right. There's protocols that are complex. There's also complexities that don't have a protocol.
Is this close to getting the content, recognizing we'll wordsmith at another time?
I'd say coordination care for a single medical service that actually consists of multiple providers and services that need prior auth. Are we getting closer? I would say single quote medical service, because the payers don't view this as a single service. They view it as a set of atoms, and the providers are the ones that view it as a molecule that's a single service. You're going to have this surgery. But from a payer perspective, it's a micro set of individual prior auths, and there's no orchestration. And I'm hoping these FHIR APIs on standardized data sets will enable companies to develop apps that do the kind of coordination we're talking about, to improve efficiencies, reduce patient delays.
And that's a good point. You got different physician staff doing different PAs for the same patient.
And that coordination is going to have to happen for advanced EOB also. So it just seems as though it makes sense to put it in here, because in the end, when they get the approved prior authorization, patient's going to want to know, what is it going to cost me? And so putting those bundled services together makes sense. I think Rich has had his hand up for quite a while. So why don't we move off of the wordsmithing this and capture Rich, and then we can move forward.
Thanks, Cheryl. On this point, we were just talking about the comprehensive episode of care and the previous point about streamlining renewals and appeals. It occurs to me that not initially, but before we finalize, we'll want to step back and say, does adding these additional requirements expand the scope so much that it may not be feasible to implement? Meaning that if we go back to the renewals, that's pretty straightforward and in the normal work streams, both provider and payer. But the appeals process, at least on the payer's part, is manual. And if we add that to the initial implementation, it makes it a heavier lift. Similarly, if we try and solve for the complex plan of care, that adds a lot and may jeopardize our chance of success. So I'm not at all advocating that we take these things out, because they are clearly important. But I'm suggesting later on, when we've got a better picture, we go back and say, maybe let's concentrate on the simpler stuff first. And then as soon as we get success on the simpler stuff, let's add in the complexity of the appeals or the complex approvals.
Right, and that goes along with what we said on ICAD, which is, build a foundation and then allow for maturity and allow for expansion. And that's exactly what you're suggesting.
Hey, can I comment?
Yes.
Yeah, but I'm also stating very clearly that if we can get them in the first round, that's what we want to do.
Yeah, Jim? Hey, I love the idea, because especially the appeal, that's very complex. But I think that the job of this committee, to me, it seems like in our report, in our RFI, if we could indicate that, of course, we would take this in a phased approach, and phase one would include X, but we have to design phase one to make sure that companies that have access to the data can do the complex services. And then we might say in phase two, once this is in place, we also need to evaluate the appeals process. So for example, I don't think we should take out the complex case, because I don't think it adds to our complexity. It just makes sure that the rules are right. For example, I was gonna joke, and we say if the Hans, Jim, Gurgis future company that adjudicates prior auth for the low price, right? They need to be able to query on the patient's behalf. They need access to all the different providers, right? So it doesn't mean necessarily that it's a lot of significant work for the rule and for our comments, but the design has to make sure that app developers on behalf of patients or payers or providers actually have access to the full set of providers that are going to be contributing to that medical surgery procedure, right? And so it's just it's a good set of principles, so that when we're answering the RFI and what the ONC focuses on, we make sure that it gives access to the full picture, for example.
Jim, perfect comments and perfect segue. Before we move on to your comment, is there anything else, or anybody who disagree with anything that we've talked about this morning? And can we move on, keeping those caveats in mind? Okay, seeing no hands. Now this next section, I think we need to keep Jim's comments in mind. We're looking at what is the prior authorization functional capabilities that are needed, regardless what vendor, regardless who's doing it, what are those functional capabilities needed? And again, I think we can, while we're looking at the minimal, we're also going to be looking at how to lead those innovators, right, to that fully utopia workflow that we're talking about in those last two bullets. So let's focus on the basic and then move to the more innovative functional capabilities. But before we get adding, let's go through what we talked about yesterday or last week. Sorry, every day is EPA day. Talked about last week and make sure we get agreement with the changes, because some of them I made based on verbal comments, and I want to make sure that I have included and we're in agreement with these changes. So the first change added for a specific patient based on comments. Anybody in disagreement or prefer a different terminology? Okay. Two, added capture required information for and submit a query. And then added in real-time specific rules and documentation requirements for a patient-specific coverage benefit. And I use that language because that's what ICAD used. And I know it was also mentioned yesterday. Include detailed description of the predefined rules that must be satisfied for a particular PA. Request to be approved, including the data the payer requires for approval to be granted. Anybody, would they change or agree with or disagree with this? Oh, Hans.
Yeah, I have a question there, more on the first edition than the second part of it, in detailed description of the predefined rules. It's captured required information for and submit. To me, that I'm not sure whether that clarifies or starts to create, at least for me, it starts to create confusion with number three. I think the intent here is that we obtain from the payer the information on what is needed to support and submit authorization, and that doesn't jump out as clearly from the addition that without it it was clear, but including it made it more fuzzy.
So should it be stricken? To add, this should be gone.
From my perspective, I think it was clear enough, but the whomever introduced it felt it was not. I understand the direction, but it didn't jump out as clearly as I had it before.
Okay.
Wait, but there's a differentiation, though. What we're talking about here is capturing enough information to get the coverage rules. The third one is capturing the information the rule requires to submit the electronic prior authorization. So I just want to make that clear that it was actually two different, looking for two different pieces of information.
Okay, I understand. Then maybe there is a way to make that a little bit, okay. Let me think about that, because then now we're getting into then wordsmithing, because I think we're aligned on the intent.
Okay. Well, we tried to separate it out because this was the way it was presented as a, you know, sample set from ONC, but they had one identified for which would kick off the coverage requirement rule implementation guide, which is the query that goes and says, you know, what coverages does this patient have? And so then when it gets it back, and what are the documentation requirements to submit a prior auth for this type of service, it gets back the coverages for the patient and the documentation requirements. And then in number three, you collect all the information needed to submit the prior auth. That's how it's set up, because it tried to align to the implementation guides and the Da Vinci process is already set up.
Yeah, I'm like Hans, I've got a little bit of fuzziness here. So the way I'm rereading 1, 2, and 3, and then, you know, like we just discussed on the previous page, the first transaction should be simple. So number one here is, if I'm thinking about it correctly, is a very lightweight transaction saying provider, patient, proposed service, is prior auth required? Response is a simple yes or no. If it's a yes, then I think what we're talking about is a system-wise is the payer system would return to the provider automatically everything we're talking about in number two. And then once the provider receives all the information from the payer about what are the requirements, the documentation, and so on, Then we go to step three, and the payer system or the provider system then completes the package and ships it off to the payer.
So it sounds like, Tammy, we are going to have to wordsmith this to make it clear what the capabilities are and who's the actor in that particular scenario. Raised her hand as well, but it does look like we need clarity around that since our own group is having these type of questions. We need to make it more clear.
Is there anybody, Heather, we'll get to you. Just, is there anybody who would like to take a stab on that and bring that back to the next call?
I'm typing right now in something to play with it.
Hans is assigned. Yes, I love doing that. Heather.
Yeah, I mean, I understand the kind of the confusion here, and I think there are some good examples of things in the chat. Sometimes the payer might need to know more than just the patient and the service to tell you prior auth needed. It might be a site of service thing. I think maybe some examples might make this a little bit more clear. Sometimes a particular site of service might require prior auth. Sometimes they need to know the patient's gender, even. There's other pieces of information that might be important for whether something requires prior auth. So I think that's what we're trying to get at here. And maybe some examples would help flesh this out a little bit.
Yeah, and I think that's where the note came. And I don't know if Rich, if that was you, if they're going to require the actual physician name or they're going to require certain information that may not be known when the prior auth is being sent, that needs to be, you know, the payer needs to be cognizant of what information actually is available at a point in time. Patrick?
Yep, and Matt's comment, Tammy, is actually on number three. So, and it's a very subtle one, but it says collect and collect clinical and administrative documentation. The ideal state would be that the information would be collected automatically so that, you know, using CQL or something else, it's automatically queried from the EHR. Otherwise, you're still imposing a burden on providers or back office staff to go pull PDFs or what out of the system. And it also would improve efficacy on the payer side because they're requesting exactly what they need in an automated fashion, as opposed to a provider handing and pecking through the EHR record.
Is this what you wanted, Hans? Is this the change in verbiage to that you're looking for?
On number three, automatic collection. I think we need to recognize that some of it will be automatically feasible, and other part there will be user intervention required because the data is not yet automatically available. So I'd be careful to tie number three to fully automated, rather to acknowledge that it needs to be collected and it could be.
So you could say automatic collection of clinical administrative documentation, you know, as available.
Right.
And then certainly it's going to be supplemented.
I'd be careful a little bit with that as well, because that looks like that we only are looking for data that can be automatically done, but where a user needs to gather some information, scan something to become a PDF, whatever, because it's just not in the system or not yet retrievable in that way, that you still need to have the ability to merge it, quote unquote, with the data that's automatically collected so that you still provide the complete set of documentation necessary. We still need to have the full set of documentation submitted with the prior authorization. That should not be a separate flow. We just need to acknowledge that on the provider side, not everything is going to be immediately automatically retrieved.
Hey, thank you. Can I comment on that point?
Right. So we need to speak to it as needs to be available to be combined with other data that is required for the prior authorization that may have to be collected outside of the EHR system. And then we have a lot of hands up. So this is great.
Or even within the EHR system. Don't assume that everything in the EHR system is already automatically retrievable for the purpose of this.
Okay, that's a good point.
And I'm gonna say system or software, because is it an EMR, wherever it is, right? Whoever's doing this capability. And I know it needs to be a different word. So Jim, you go first.
Yeah, I wanted to comment on this point. I suggest that we change the wording from we're going to automate this whole thing, to we're going to use automation where appropriate to improve efficiency. And let me tell you why I say that. I think Hans is right. I think we're understating the amount of things that can't be automated from an EMR. So there's magical thinking about data and its readiness and how data is represented. For example, an echocardiogram may not even be in a procedure section of a chart. It may be in a dictation section, right? So though patient date of birth, address, there may be things that are automated that nurses or staff are handwriting in forms now. The majority of it is a human being trying to understand, okay, they need the echo, they need this, right? So I think we should just say we're going to utilize automation as a tactic, but really we're about optimizing efficiency. I also want to point out that a human has to validate that the documents mined from the EMR are the right ones for that procedure. That's tough to automate because automation typically works in a set of non-changing, simple rules. And when there's complexities and differences in EMRs, you're going to need a human. The other point I wanted to make is the timing point, right? And the reason I keep saying in the message is we ought to have some sort of recommend metric. One of the metrics might be reduced denials, right? Because you can imagine an automated world where it queries but accidentally submits a prior auth that gets denied because a procedure report hadn't yet entered the chart. And once something is denied, it gets pushed in and relegated to the appeals process, which is very manual. So if we talk about the design, automation should be used, but I want to make sure we keep pointing out the human involvement because that's the reality of the workflow because of the variety of the EMR data structures and the timing issue that could inadvertently create more burden by not having the provider or somebody determine when they're going to go ahead and submit the data for prior auth because the chart is complete.
Yeah, that's a great point. I put that as a note for us to come back after we have the functionality. Question for you, and Raj, we'll get to you at your next. Is that a point that we need to make overall? All these functional capabilities, we want them to be as automated as possible, or do you think it's specific for this this number or this capability? Jim.
Tammy, while he's thinking about it, I think it should be an overall principle that it impacts the entire process.
Yeah, I agree.
So what I would say is we want to leverage information systems to optimize the efficiency of this process. One of those is automating pre-populated. That's one tactic. Another tactic is creating a system that allows a human to select documents from the EMR that are appropriate. And another is a system that allows for timing issues to make sure premature submissions don't lead to increases in inappropriate denials. So the language should be using technology and process to optimize this process, not that we're going to automate the whole thing, because that's
right. That's a good point. And then when you're ready, Tammy, Raj has a...
Yeah, okay. I'll get that rewritten after reviewing the transcripts. Go ahead, Raj.
Absolutely agree with, I think Jim's comment is pretty appropriate. My question is that as we go through this exercise of, you know, thinking about what is the ideal state as we think about short-term, long-term, looking at all the questions from the RFI, most of the questions refer to where do we start, right? So as we look at the big picture, this is the best to do it. I'm struggling to think like, you know, how far we would think, like this is best to capture everything to Jim's point earlier. We should think to the end state. But I think this problem is so complex and so big, right? We can probably spend a lot of time keep enhancing our thinking. But if you look at all the 20, 30 questions, most of the questions are like, what is the best place to start given the complexity of this problem? So how would we narrow the scope in our conversations where we can get to that? What is a fine line between these discussions?
Because Raj, exactly, Raj, that was the big question, right? Where do we spend our time? And unless we're in agreement with these functional capabilities, the other conversations are more difficult And so we're trying to get a basic agreement on what the overall functional capabilities are. Then we can look at what standards are out there that currently provide these functional capabilities and go into those other conversations. But if we don't have this foundation, I think it's going to be harder to get to those questions. So as we go through these, you know, when you go back and do the homework, you know, keep these in mind as you answer those other types of questions. So we're not going to be spending 3 weeks on this, but it's important that today that we really focus and get the majority of what these foundational functional capabilities are, recognizing we can add and subtract as we go through the questions, but we all need to have agreement on, you know, what direction we're going. Is that helpful, Raj? And are you in agreement with that, or would you recommend a different approach?
No, it helps. I'm just asking this question. Yeah, thank you.
Oh yeah, believe me, I'm not good at circling and so, you know, and coming back and going, you know. So I just kind of want to put this to bed. This is the functional capabilities as best as we can at this point in time, and then move on to those other questions, and then we'll come back with the knowledge that we glean from those conversations.
Yeah, spot on. Thank you.
Okay. Hans?
Just a quick follow-up note on Jim's comments about that we're trying to optimize efficiency. Completely agreed across the board of the process. And that can then include, I think, as we describe it, not only the interaction between the system, but also what needs to lead up to it. Like there is the need to collect potentially data by a person rather than the system because it's not automatable yet. I think once we get to the certification and capabilities, I think we have to be very careful as to what makes sense to be subject to certification, and that systems need to do the same, like interoperability, talk the same language, make sure that that's unambiguous and clear, versus what the systems themselves do to help enhance it. But I think these can be considerations, but we have to be very careful that that is largely opportunities and how it fits in that we are less likely to say is that this is the way to do it. And therefore, you've seen over the years that certification criteria have been much more drifting towards the interoperability part, because that's where we need to be in sync, versus the functional capability parts inside the system, because that really depends on what the best way is in context. That is very hard, if not impossible, to synchronize and harmonize to a singular approach. But just as a notion there, not with the intent overall, that's what we're trying to do. But we don't spend too much time on that when we get the certification and standards.
Well, and Hans, that's so important. I mean, these have to be in the right speak, right? So that they can actually be implemented, and we can't be verbose, right? So totally agree. Jim, can I assign to you taking a look at that overall principle for next week, and putting that in the language and tone that you prefer, because I think you really eloquently said it. And if you just kind of spin on it a little bit, you could come up with something really great. Jim, go ahead, go for it. You're on mute, by the way, so I know you just said yes. Excellent.
No way, hell no. Hey,
yes.
One example of, I get it, the RFI is focusing on really remedial atomic things like data sets. You know, is it CCDA, FHIR? They're asking us to comment on all that. But the reason I bring up these examples is not to make it complicated, because we're not going to put in the rule the details around the medical service that had 15 doctors that have prior auths. But it may inform whether CCDA, the push model versus a RESTful FHIR model, it may imply, is there an ability to broadcast? You know, how does the app, assume, for example, there's an app, how does it know who all the players are? And it may color our comments as to which approach is appropriate by understanding some of these complex workflows. Otherwise, we could go down a path that in the end doesn't support the complex workflows.
Jim, I saw all these comments as supporting what you were saying, in that, you know, you're the first iteration, but when we come up with the end product, taking into account everything that you have been saying, we need functional criteria that can be implemented. So I don't think anything was said counter to what I please keep expressing your comments, because this is adding value to where our end work product is going to be and our principles around this. Raj?
Yeah, exactly. Jim, I really appreciate all your comments. So don't take it anything as what I said. I'm just trying to understand the scope. But the comment I wanted to make, Tammy, here is the provider's concern of like what is the payer is automatically collecting, right? So as we talk to providers and implementing this with a couple of customers, like we need to know because this is a huge concern for them, how much data is flowing out without knowingly or unknowingly, right? So how would we add some language to ensure at the provider's discretion or something like that?
Can I ask a favor so that we can move along? Raj, I know you have, you know, after seeing your presentation, I know you know exactly what type of functional capabilities are needed in order to be successful in this collection arena. Is this anything that you'd be willing to take a stab at and bring back next week?
Sure.
Because again, you know, vendors, when you're looking at specs, it's a whole different speak than us trying to make sure that the end goal, the end capability meets those needs. And so I think it would be helpful because I think you understand what this is intended to mean. So how do we write it so that a developer understands and it can, you know, make this happen?
Yep. Yeah. Please.
Okay.
Thanks.
Thank you for that. And if anybody has any disagreement with these assignments or anything, let me know. I'm just trying to move us along forward and taking advantage of your expertise, I think will just help us get where we need to be a little quicker. Okay, anybody have anything else on 1 to 3, recognizing that Hans is going to work on the language for 2 based on our conversations. Raj is going to work on 3 and Jim is going to work on this overall principle.
And I already put a draft in the chat.
Hey, Raj, Raj, why don't we work together on that since it's the same section?
Definitely, Jim. Yeah,
beautiful.
Okay, you guys are testing my abilities here. Okay, that's not you.
If you put this in Google, we can also change these names as we work together. So later, Tammy, we can help you there.
Okay.
On that note.
Here it is, right here. Here, you got it.
And Tammy and Cheryl, is that we have currently 2 Google documents that are running in parallel. If at the end of the session, we understand which one can we touch, which one can we not, where should we put our remaining comments in, et cetera, will be helpful because it's going to go back and forth, looking back, adding some notes and going forward.
Yeah, what I'm going to do is take everything we have done today and drop it in a second column, and then the comments will come under that document. So we'll also preserve every meeting's work product and the comments will be added based on that conversation. Does that make sense? Or
yep. So then PPA RFI task force, RFI questions worksheet will remain our main focus that we keep on adding onto. And
we will keep adding a column based on the discussion of the call.
Great.
And so then if I didn't capture something appropriately on this call in the comment, let me know. I'll take a look at all your comments and then incorporate them into the discussion document for the next meeting so that we keep moving forward. And you guys, I'm on Pacific time. So really appreciate everybody's comments, even when they come in the morning. But if there's any way you can do it before the morning of Thursday, but that'd be great, but it doesn't matter. We really want your comments.
So you add an extra comment column to the RFI questions worksheet. That's the document in which you're going to do that. Okay.
Yeah, that's a long-winded answer to what I was trying to say. That's why I don't write functional spec. Okay. Back up to this one. Okay. And what I use is a different color for every time we're having a conversation. So blue is what we talked about yesterday. Purple is what was added from you guys' comments over during the homework period.
Okay.
So Hans is suggesting for 2, capture and submit the necessary information through a query from the provider to the payer to enable the payer to return the documentation necessary to support the prior.
That is an incomplete cut and paste. Let me try that again.
Oh, it could have been me here. Let me.
Tammy, can we get all these comments for the next round? Because we are working on others too, right? Then we can review all of them together.
Yes. Yeah. Keep answering the other questions because, again, okay. We'll keep pulling them up. And I'm going to assign different areas because, like Raj, the developer questions make sense for you to really focus in on. So that, you know, again, we'll have a robust comments every time we get to these things.
Okay,
so let me go back to yours, Hans, because maybe I just didn't do it right.
I'll we put it in the chat with the full one, the last one.
Oh, yeah, I don't think I have. Okay.
There you go.
Thank you very much. And I'll work on my skills. And we'll be going from the Google Doc. I'm just not really Google friendly yet. I'm working on it.
I put it. Your skills are pretty impressive. So,
oh, bless your heart, Cheryl. Okay, capture and submit the necessary information through a query from the provider to the payer to enable the payer to return the documentation requirements necessary to support the prior authorization request for the intended service procedure prescription at hand for coverage determination for the specific patient.
And that's just for the first sentence. The include would stay. Include, et cetera, et cetera.
So capture specific.
The first sentence. The other one, as is, work at least for me.
Okay, and then recognizing that we're gonna have that overall document principle from Jim, which would apply to this, which means we wanna automate as much as that is possible. Is that kind of where you were intending, Hans? So that automation piece isn't in it because that applies to all of these functional capabilities?
Correct. This is just capability and then automate as best as we can.
And then the second sentence is starts with include detailed description of predefined. There you go.
That would still be there. Yeah.
Okay. So I'm going to bring this up just because I'm a visual person. Anybody have any comments on this proposal with the caveat that the overall principle across all of these is going to be automate all of these functional capabilities to the highest level possible? Oh, Rich, sorry.
Yeah, I'm still struggling with why should number two be another query from the provider? Why can't that be an automated response from the payer, assuming that all the information we talk about in number two is actually submitted in number one?
I think where they were going is they don't believe that an automated response can be handled at this point in the game, that there may be some additional information that would be found outside the system. Go ahead, Jim.
Can I explain that? So
yes.
Let's look at COVID for a minute, right? So there's this notion where people who aren't used to working with EMRs simply think it's a simple exercise. That they have this magical thinking that the EMRs are all standardized, their data models are the same, how they handle colonoscopy, even the same entity. Some doctors may dictate and it ends up in notes. Another might use a template and it ends up in images, right? So that's why we can't automate it yet. The EMRs aren't, it's more like the Tower of Babel. So some things have been standardized, right? But many of the documents and how EMRs capture and represent them are so variable that a lot of this has to be selected by a provider or a staff member right now. So I think it surprises many people that you can't just pluck things out of the EMR. There's context around it. And I'll quit bringing up that point.
And in a way, I'm agreeing with Rich in the sense that if I'm looking at CRD as the Da Vinci specification for that first communication with the payer, is that one and two are actually combined. I'm going to be asking and say, for this service ABC, do I need to have prior authorization? But just submitting service ABC is not enough necessarily for the payer to give the answer whether it needs a prior authorization or not. So there might be 1, 2, 3, 4 attributes additionally that are needed for the payer to properly answer that question, which is what I think Tu is trying to describe. What is that data set that that I need to answer that? And I apologize for the dog because you just got something. And while I'm speaking, so I think in that sense, two capabilities to highlight that I need that extra data, but it's not the full set of data for the actual prior authorization. It's not that, because depending on what they now say, okay, yes, I need prior authorization, then the DTR is going to come back and say, oh, if that's the case, yes, you need authorization. These are the 100 things that you need to submit back in order to justify that, whatever. So I think, and I can see that that the alternative is not making that fully clear yet, but I would read it the same way as Rich, that 1 and 2 are actually about the same interaction, not necessarily 2 or 3.
I'm still viewing this as two separate queries. The first one is prior authorization needed? And to answer that question, the payer needs all the data irrespective of whether that's automated or manually considered. Then the second question is prior authorization granted? Is the decision made and the authorization actually approved by the payer?
Right. And I think, Rich, that 2 is actually not that. I think that's actually the third thing that we're talking about here. I think 2, because remember, we're using DaVinci use cases that were developed for multiple purposes. So each use case and each implementation guide is not just used for one thing. Documentation templates and rules was originally created to do gaps in care and other things in addition to prior authorizations was added. So you might have a person that hasn't had physical therapy yet and requires that before a prior authorization can be submitted. So the documentation templates and rules, as you're looking at how this may all happen at the same time, but it's going after different information based on the state of the patient and where the patient is in the process. So even though we've separated out as 1 and 2, they may happen at the same time and return to you more information that's more robust, but we should really be looking at it separately because we haven't yet had the people come and provide that overview of how those implementation guides really work. And I think that's a challenge I would say to you. Just leave it open until next week. When Viet comes, I think you're going to see that how some of these things work together, and it can't really all be combined into one thing because of how we're being asked to look at it and provide comments to it.
Okay.
And I know Raj has his hand up as well.
Yeah, and we'll go to Raj. Raj will be the last comment on the section, then I'm going to be dropping it in that Google Doc. So please add your comments to it this week. Raj?
Yeah, so I think just to expand on Cheryl answered that question. The first question is the prior auth required? That's what we are using for the query. The second captures for the payers to return what documentation requirements for the query. They need more than just the service item or the codes they're sending. So sometimes the line of business, sometimes the facility, sometimes the provider information. So the second one goes really in detail of provide enough information so that payers can respond with appropriate documentation requirements. So they both go together, but it's just capturing much more clearly what information would need for the payers to respond. Thanks, Tom.
Okay, so if this response was either denied or we need to know your CPT code, so to speak, that's what the 2 comes in.
Yeah,
you
that's
find
not,
it and respond it. That
you're not you never get an approval on step 1, right?
Well, wrong.
Step 1 is, do I need to proceed with prior authorization? Here are 5 pieces of information, right? That's all it is. The response contains yes for this service, patient, plan, context. Prior authorization is required. Here are the rules. Click here or whatever. You know, here's a. These are the things that we need to process the authorization.
I can add more stuff to that one time later.
Go for it.
No, I can wordsmith that external step later.
This one? Okay.
Number one.
Okay, cool. And then what I do is when you put your comments in, then I'll combine them and have a kind of a consensus, including your comments, so everybody, whatever you say is going to be included in the conversation, right? Okay, so with those assignments, what time is it? Let's go to 4. And I realize that these are not in workflow order. And so for the next meeting, I'll put them in workflow order and may lean on a few of you to do so, okay? Electronically submit completed documentation for prior. I don't think we added anything there. Number 5, receive a request response from a payer regarding approval denial, including a specific reason for denial and required action to appeal, or need for additional information, including detailed description of the documentation or required. Any thoughts? Is the additions fine based on our conversation?
There was a piece missing on that one, Tammy.
Okay.
The first statement was receive and record an acknowledgement of receipt from a payer, and then it went on to receive a response. Somehow it got separated in the document.
Okay. Receive and record an acknowledgement from the payer?
From a payer, yeah. And then it went on to what you just said. I got it up on my other screen over here.
Payer. Well, acknowledgement response from a payer, maybe that's where. Okay, that's where we.
Right. Receive and record an acknowledgement from a payer.
Okay.
Right.
Okay. Any, Raj?
One thing I see here is just contemplating, should we put any timing aspect here? Because this is kind of a black box, right? You know, acknowledgement comes, but what about, you know, time limits? You know, I know CMS did something around this in the previous rule.
Yeah. And we'll come back after we have all these functional capabilities honed out, and go back through the timing infrastructure rules, bulk for single prescription, you know, those caveats of the items above. Okay.
Sure, thanks.
But thanks for noting that so that we know to take a look at that for this. Heather?
Thanks, Tammy. I guess I have a little concern about the end of the saying, you know, if they're, you know, asking for additional information. And I guess my hope is if the earlier steps have been done well, that would be very rare, right? Certainly, we don't want to force a denial prematurely if something in the submitted information forces another question from the payer. But I worry that this indicates this is going to be a continual back and forth, and I think that's what we're trying to get away from. So I don't know if there's some way to qualify that, or it seems to me that should be a hopefully rare situation if the previous steps are going well and that the transparency early on is the way it should be in this process.
Could you, Heather, put in the Google Docs a caveat to that because we still need to have the capable functionality in the event it occurs. But I think your point is well versed. Just because there's functional capability doesn't mean we want to use it, right? So I think that's a really good point to put back. I call them caveats to our principles above. Would that be okay, Heather?
Can I make a comment on that point?
Yes, go ahead, Jim.
Yeah, Heather, I wonder if there's people from the payer side that could enlighten us, because the sense I get is that a prior auth is not, you've seen that there are different categories of complexity. So there are prior auths we all have that just require a couple data points, and Heather, your points are right on. And then there's complex, like endocrine tumor testing things, where there may be more of a complex stepwise approach to evidence-based care for that patient, that may be more complex and may need sort of a dialogue back and forth through, you know, where the payer is saying, okay, now we need this, right? Now, I may be wrong, maybe it's simpler than that. Maybe in these complex situations, what is provided real time to the provider or their staff is in fact that complex algorithm. But even when you have that complex algorithm, there's still the notion of where are you in the testing cycle? Have you done the endocrine test first, then the second one, and then based on the results of that, a third one? There may be some complexity. So I wonder if it'd be useful, Cheryl and Tammy, to take a look at the types of requests to see if that will inform our comments about the system capabilities.
Yeah, I think that's a fair question. And I think someone else brought up just prior to that, Jim, something about prior authorizations with like qualifications. So I'm aware of a patient that was provided, well, yeah, you have to get a prior auth to get this test done, but we're not going to authorize this facility. You have to go somewhere else. And more of those types of scenarios are occurring. So how does this handle that? Because from the patient's perspective, they're like, I don't want to go to this other place because I can't get my data in my chart like I can for everything else because they're not part of it. So now I'm stuck with information that can't be gathered digitally from all of my healthcare partners. And again, I'm just presenting that because that's a real live situation. I don't know how or in what way this should handle that, but that scenario that you just mentioned absolutely can happen. And I see that Raj also raised his hand.
Yeah, I think to Jim's point, like I have seen use cases where when patient is hemodynamically unstable, when you have enough information about oxygen saturation rate or vitals, you have enough to say this is good. I don't need anything else. I'll approve this. Whereas scenarios of bariatric surgery and other procedures where it is a bit more complex for every payer to define those requirements. That's where you have the use cases where people ask for, have they done enough therapies? Have they done enough of other things before they approve? So at this point of where the maturity is, we allow both things to happen, but eventually as data sets are matured, as workflows are matured, to Heather's point, I think we will get to that level of automation.
Okay, are we comfortable on this one? We want to come back when we discuss the timing pieces. We need to add an overall principle, right, about streamlining prior auth to ensure, obviously, the less steps. Heather will make it much more eloquent. And investigate use cases to ensure that this meets appropriate business needs. So I don't know if the payer representative, people who have the payer background, if you could just take a look at that piece. Is there any other steps on this one? Or otherwise, is this okay as is with the follow-ups signed? Hearing nothing, I'm going to move to 6.
And I'll look at that one after as well, Tammy.
Excellent. Thank you, Cheryl. And then just added again, we were going for the specificity for a patient to have a specific reason. And then here is an addition one that was added on the last call. And if you don't mind, I'm going to go for another 5 minutes. And then I just want to take care of a couple follow-up things, okay? Automated retrieval of data from external systems as appropriate.
So just a point of info, then we're going to delay the public comment for 5 minutes.
Oh, shoot.
That's okay.
We'll just... Just
finish and we'll delay it 5 minutes.
I forgot. I apologize. And that's a very important piece. Hans? Oh, you're on mute. So I bet you're saying you love everything.
Yeah. No, not close. On 6, I like what's there. I'll give that. But what's the discussion about that the patient should be able to do such a query as well, not only the provider to get current status, but the patient themselves?
Yes.
I'm just curious whether part of the discussion and what Cheryl mentioned about whatever.
Hans, that was something that we brought forward from the intersection of clinical administrative data, because today, or what we put in that recommendation is that the patient should be able to query their patient access API and get a status of the prior auth, because often the patient is the one who's wondering, where is it? Why isn't it approved? reaching out to providers, reaching out to payers, trying to get things move forward. So we've said they should be provided with the automated status when they do the request for their patient information, and to be able to get that through the patient access API.
Agreed. And therefore, number six, would it be a patient or a provider or patient query? That's what I was trying to say.
Does it have to be two, or can it be one? I thought it would have to be two, but maybe not.
Well, isn't that the provider would like to understand? But it might be the same format and everything, but from a capability perspective, is the question that not only the provider wants to initiate a query to understand what the status is, but the patient, in light of Cheryl's comments and ICAT, wants to do the same thing. Effectively.
And Hans, there's one other group. It's stakeholders need to have the ability to understand the status about a prior. A stakeholder.
Yes, all of the stakeholders. It could be a DME provider. It could be, you know, whoever. So it should just say that there should be a query capability with the information going to the appropriate stakeholders, including the patient.
I think that clarification of to appropriate stakeholders to be part of it, to recognize that. Don't just think about the provider who submitted it.
Yeah. If you want me to work on the wording of that one, Tammy, I'll go in after and try to reword it based on what people are saying today.
Love it. Love it. Do I have enough there for you to understand where the conversation was going? I think we can get rid of this, right? I just thought it can't be a provider because it's too many stakeholders. Okay, so eight, automated retrieval of data from external systems is appropriate. I think this was raised by Hans, just to clarify that if the functional capability isn't within the EHR, it still needs to be pulled either from a revenue cycle management PMS system or app. And so that capability is needed. Okay, nine. Now is nine the same thing as eight? Everything that's in green is what was added in the comments after the conversation yesterday.
This is really speaks to our overall principle that we talked about, that somebody had added in the document. So I think we should assign this one to, I think it's Jim who's looking at the overall, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So this, if this needs to be a standalone or if it can be incorporated in the one that Jim was looking at.
Yeah.
Yeah. And as well as that, looking at number three, it's probably a refinement in some areas of three.
Yeah.
Maybe redundant to three. Okay.
The collection that from a health IT system in three, you need to recognize it might be from different systems. It might need to be coordinated, and there might be some manual in there. So
excellent. Okay, so Jim will bring that one back.
I think 10 is really what we just talked about for six. So I think we need to combine those. And I really think we need to go to public comment now because we only have 1 minute left.
Okay, and then can I come back after public comment and then just finish up just a couple things real quick?
Yeah.
Okay.
Absolutely. Can we pull up the public comment slide, please? All right. So if you are on Zoom and would like to make a comment, please use the hand raise function, which is located on the Zoom toolbar at the bottom of your screen. If you are dialed in only on the phone, press *9 to raise your hand. And once called upon, press *6 to mute or unmute your line. So let's pause for a second and see if we have any public comments. I am not seeing public comments, but we'll leave this slide up, I guess, where people can, raise their hand till the end of today's meeting. So I'll turn it back to Tammy and Cheryl. Thank you.
So Tammy, you're going to, just so we're all clear, take the notes that you captured today live. Thank you for that. You're fabulous at it, by the way. And put those back into the Google Doc. And then we're going to be asking all of our participants to take a look at the updated notes. So let's give people one or 2 days to go in and make those adjustments to 1 through 10 that we discussed today. And then let's say by Monday, hopefully, those updates would have been made so that the rest of the panelists can go in and you know, either agree with the reworded functions or not. But we really do need to move forward for next week into some of the questions. So I think what we should do is agree next week to leave the functions where they are, and we'll work on those offline, and we'll start working on the questions, because the questions are really specific about certification requirements and things that people are going to find both in, you know, the implementation guides, the CCDA, attachment rules, et cetera. So we will have Viet come next week and speak for about 10 or 15 minutes to provide an overview for everyone on the implementation guides. We did identify somebody who could speak to the CCDA if we need a quick primer on that from our panelists. And then again, I think there was someone today that volunteered to potentially provide a quick overview of the attachment rules if that's necessary. And then we can make good progress with our questions. Is that how you see it, Tammy?
Yeah, that's fine. And I just want to also just have a couple minutes to assign the questions and okay, based on the background, and then also go through who we asked as subject matter experts and double check if there's anybody else that we want to add. And I can do that right now while we're still on public comment period.
Okay, let's just ask if there are any comments on the phone, because I don't see any in the Zoom meeting. Anybody waiting for public comment?
I don't see anyone waiting, Cheryl.
Okay, then go ahead, Tammy.
All right. I just got to wait till someone gives up the screen a minute. Okay, here we go. And thank you, guys. I know we want to make sure that this is perfect, but sometimes at the beginning, we just got to get the intent so that we're all on the same page. And you're going to notice in here, there's a lot of purple. These are all came additional functional capabilities that came in the comments. So we'd really like you to address those. The more we can do via email, the better. And we had some additional comments on 2, 3, and 4, which I condensed. So what I'm hopeful is that topics 4, 5, 6, and 7, if you could really focus in on those areas that your background is, this is how I had assigned it. If anybody would like to be assigned to a different section or I have it inappropriate, Heather, I apologize, but just based on your expertise, I put you on patient and provider. And I'm hopeful that everyone will want to take a look at the patient as well. However, we do have some really good comments on the patient section already. And then in regards, just to add on to Cheryl's comments, Viet will be coming. He's going to be focusing in on what functional capabilities are needed to support or would be built with the implementation guides that support the prior authorization. And then the questions relating to these implementation guides, such as readiness and the workflow. If there's anything else you guys think you need to hear from him in order to accurately respond to those questions, just zip me an email. And I will add that to his list. Hans, I'm sorry, I'm putting you on the spot here, but Hans brought up the comment on our last conversation about how this is not just the EHR, and if we want a successful prior authorization process, we really have to think about the different ways that providers may obtain that functionality, whether it be an external app that's integrated within the workflow or working in coordination with the revenue cycle management or practice management system, or even just the revenue cycle practice management system may handle a lot of these functionalities. And so he's working on that workflow so we can understand and have a visual of it a little bit better on where the functionalities reside. And with this certification, all of the vendors are under our purview. So this will be important for us to understand as we move forward. That's will be based on Hans' time. And then the other SME we thought we needed is the attachment SME. And unless there's any argument or if there's an expert on this call that would like to discuss the attachments, what's in place now, what are the functional capabilities, what attachment standard versions are in use by the EHR, how are the attachment requests and exchange between all these vendors, how do we support the decision support models and preliminary guidance on specific PA RFI questions. I was going to reach out to Weedy. There's quite a few experts at Weedy that have already done research in this area and get them on the call. So comments on if we need more or any additions to this, would appreciate it. Jim.
Yeah, I was just going to emphasize Hans' point about not assuming this is happening in the EHR. There may be other systems. Mm-hmm. And I think the best way to do that is to assume a world where there's a third-party app that does all this, because then you don't make any erroneous assumptions that somebody has access to the data because they are the EMR. That won't preclude EMRs from developing these capabilities or others, but if we really assume for our thought processes that it's a third-party app, then I think that keeps us disciplined because the standards need to support a third-party app doing it.
And that's a good point, Jim. And when you look at it that way, you'll notice that the three DaVinci interactions are insufficient. Doesn't mean that they're not standards for the other ones, but in order to do that, you need more interactions in order to make it work. And that's highlighted in that. That's what I'm trying to figure out a visual way to bring that out so it's recognized and then we can act from it.
I think so we need to leave it here.
Focus
Tammy.
Next meeting. And yep, all yeah. Done. Thank you guys. Sorry. I like to move forward.
No, I appreciate everybody for staying a little bit longer today. This has been a fabulous, fabulous conversation. I think we have the right panelists. I'm so appreciative of everybody's input and really look forward to the work in the next meeting. So Tammy, Excel will send out an update that highlights everything that you just covered so we can clarify assignments. And please, if you have any questions, reach out to Tammy or myself and we'll clarify those and get those resolved before we meet next.
And I'll have the updates in it by end of day Pacific time. So if you do need this guidance, go in tomorrow, if that's acceptable. And again, we can do this back and forth via email, just as Raj says. So just because we're not working on question 8, please put your stuff in there. I will continue to synthesize and have a consensus answer based on the feedback. So we can also have those conversations via email or via that Google whatever thing. Okay, well, you guys all have a great day because I'll keep you on all day because this is an exciting topic. Hey.
Well, yes, one point is I've because of the participation we saw earlier,
yes,
I recommend we add someone to the task. I think we add Hans Dog to the task force.
Oh, I mean, he was okay. Talking. I agree with what Hans Dog said. I was feeling the same at that point in time. Have a good one. Happy Thursday.
All right. Thank you. All right. Bye.